The thousand injuries of Fortunato I had borne as best I could, but when he ventured upon insult, I vowed revenge. With these chilling words, Edgar Allan Poe plunges us into the mind of Montresor, a man consumed by vengeance. The Cask of Amontillado isn't just a tale of murder, it's a psychological journey into the darkest corners of human nature, where perceived slights fester until they justify the unthinkable. What makes this story so disturbing isn't the violence itself, but how meticulously planned it is. Montresor doesn't act in passion, but with cold calculation, revealing how revenge can transform a person into something monstrous while they remain convinced of their righteousness. The story forces us to confront uncomfortable questions. How easily might our own resentments spiral into something destructive? What invisible line separates justice from vengeance? And perhaps most disturbingly, could we recognize a Montresor if we met one, smiling at us while harboring deadly intentions? What makes Montresor's revenge so chilling is his dual criteria. It must be executed with complete impunity, and his victim must understand who is punishing him and why. This isn't just about elimination, it's about savoring the victim's recognition of defeat. The ambiguity around the thousand injuries and final insult makes the tale more disturbing, as we never learn if these offenses were real or imagined. Most unsettling is Montresor's ability to compartmentalize, maintaining a facade of goodwill while harboring murderous intent. His warm carnival greeting to Fortunato carries devastating dramatic irony, as this lucky meeting will lead to his victim's doom. This duality shows how the human mind can separate action from moral consequence when driven by perceived injustice. The revenge is both physical and psychological. Montresor needs Fortunato to experience the full horror of his fate before death, transforming the murder into a perverse form of communication, a final statement in what he sees as a long dialogue of injury and insult. Montresor exploits Fortunato's singular weakness, his pride in wine connoisseurship. Like a skilled angler, he crafts the perfect lure during carnival season, when unusual behavior raises no suspicion. The manipulation is precise. By mentioning a rare Amontillado and suggesting consulting Lucchesi instead, Montresor triggers Fortunato's competitive nature. Fortunato's dismissal of Lucchesi reveals how deeply his identity depends on being considered superior. Despite a severe cold, Fortunato's pride compels him to verify the wine, ignoring his health. His jester's costume, complete with cap and bells, adds tragic irony, as the man whose name suggests fortune walks foolishly toward his doom. The trap succeeds because it's baited with what Fortunato values above all else, his reputation and self-image. The journey into the catacombs mirrors a psychological descent into darkness, with each step taking them further from the carnival's light and safety. The setting grows increasingly ominous. White nitre on vault walls, fetid air, and narrowing passages create both atmosphere and foreshadowing. Montresor's false concern reveals deeper psychological manipulation. When Fortunato coughs in the damp air, Montresor's feigned worry, "Your health is precious, you are rich, respected, admired, beloved, you are happy, as once I was," hints at a possible reversal of fortunes between the men. Montresor continues plying Fortunato with wine, keeping him disoriented. In dark irony, Fortunato toasts the buried that repose around us, unknowingly referencing his fate. The family coat of arms, a huge human foot door crushing a serpent whose fangs are embedded in the heel, symbolizes the coming revenge, while the motto, "Nemo me impune lacessit," "No one attacks me with impunity," states Montresor's driving philosophy. When Fortunato makes the sign of the Masons, Montresor responds by producing a trowel, a deadly double meaning foreshadowing his imminent masonry work. The methodical construction of Fortunato's tomb amplifies the horror. Rather than a swift act of violence, Montresor builds the wall deliberately, laying each tier with professional precision while his victim watches. The technical masonry details create a chilling contrast with the human drama unfolding. As Fortunato cycles through emotions, Montresor remains coldly focused on his task, each row of bricks marking the literal narrowing of his victim's world. Fortunato's reactions follow a tragic progression, from dismissing it as a carnival joke to dawning terror. "The Amontillado!" he exclaims, still clinging to their supposed purpose. His desperate pleas eventually dissolve into hysterical laughter. "A very good joke indeed. We will have many a rich laugh about it at the Palazzo." Montresor's simple response, "Yes, the Amontillado," is devastating in its finality, acknowledging the bait while sealing Fortunato's fate as the wall rises to silence his final screams. For half a century, no one has disturbed his remains. In pace, requiescat. These final words reveal that Montresor's crime remained hidden for 50 years, transforming the tale from a simple murder account into a lifetime's confession. The five-decade silence speaks volumes about Montresor's psychology. He shows no remorse or guilt driving him to confess, instead recounting the events with the same cold precision used in executing them. The satisfaction of his revenge has seemingly sustained him through the years. This outcome raises questions about justice, as Montresor achieved exactly what he sought, revenge without consequence. No authority discovered his crime. His confession, now near death, to someone who knows the nature of his soul, possibly a priest, suggests judgment may only come from beyond the grave. The Latin, "in pace requiescat," may he rest in peace, carries bitter irony, a Catholic burial blessing for someone who received no proper burial, only entombment among Montresor's ancestors. This performative piety starkly contrasts with his actions, revealing his moral disconnect. By finally sharing this story, Montresor potentially violates his own perfect revenge criterion of complete impunity, suggesting his need to boast ultimately outweighed his commitment to secrecy. The Cask of Amontillado has maintained its grip on readers for nearly two centuries by tapping into universal fears. The contrast between carnival revelry above and murder below perfectly mirrors human nature. Beneath our social exterior lies a dark labyrinth of primitive impulses. The story's exploration of betrayal touches our primal fear that trusted friends might secretly wish us harm. Montresor's convincing facade while plotting murder suggests we can never truly know another's intentions. The murder method, immurement, exploits deep fears of confinement and abandonment. While being buried alive was a particular 19th century anxiety, the terror of inescapable imprisonment remains potent. The tale's endurance stems from its unresolved questions. Did Montresor face consequences? Was Fortunato truly guilty? These ambiguities make readers active participants in interpretation. The Cask reminds us that the most terrifying monsters aren't supernatural creatures, but ordinary humans whose minds transform perceived slights into justification for horror. The true terror lies in recognizing that anyone might become either the builder or victim of such walls.